Welcome to Navigating to Net Zero, an inside look from Macquarie Asset Management at what's really involved in transforming their global portfolio of infrastructure, agricultural, and real estate assets to support the transition to a low-carbon and climate-resilient economy and build sustainable long-term value. I'm Rebecca Darst, the host of this series and the founder of Investable Universe. In this episode, we'll talk about the challenge of transportation companies traveling the real road to net zero emissions on real roads, whether those are shipping lanes toward a major global port or the highways and byways leading to the parking lots of the future. We'll talk to executives at companies in Spain and California to learn how they're moving to cut their scope 1, 2, and especially scope 3 emissions, and how electrification is already shaping their businesses in some exciting ways. We'll begin with a road trip across the Iberian Peninsula, where Telpark, an owner-operator of parking lots in Spain and Portugal, is fast becoming a test site for tomorrow's car parks. It's a future Telpark envisions as one where the traditional parking lot is refitted to serve the needs of fully electrified vehicles and the energy storage needs of surrounding communities. One where a smart web app seamlessly guides users to the nearest available parking spot, limits idling, and manages traffic congestion. But before this vision becomes reality, Telpark must meet the challenge of curtailing its current emissions profile, most of which is classified Scope 3 and beyond the firm's immediate control. While you might imagine a parking lot as one place where cars are not spewing exhaust, Telpark must account for the emissions profile of cars as they drive into and out of the lot. That's called churn, and without it, you have no emissions, but you also have no parking lot. Telpark, as you'll hear, must also factor the political environment into its scenario planning. Road infrastructure and transportation projects rely heavily on government regulation and support for development plans. And while Europe's enthusiasm for projects that reduce greenhouse gas emissions and support EV uptake is high, political processes are slow and heavily bureaucratized. And that puts firms like Telpark, which are up against 2030 time constraints for net zero operations, in a tight spot. How are they doing it? More on the ins and outs of running a carbon neutral car park from Telpark's Peter Hughes. So Peter Hughes, Telpark, thank you so much for speaking with me today.
No, it's a pleasure. Thanks very much for having me.
So tell us about Telpark. Why do you think the company has an opportunity right now to move the needle on carbon emissions?
We're a relatively simple business. We have vehicles and we use electricity. And our big push was to move to renewable energy. So we've pushed that quite hard and we've got a 78% reduction in our emissions over the course of 2 years. That's 15 coming from one and 94% coming from scope two. So slowly we're going to change the cars traveling around the city, servicing our car parks. We're hoping in 24 we're going to start that transfer across to full EV vehicles or at the very least plug-in hybrid. The challenge or the opportunity that we have is with scope three. That's people coming into our car parks, driving into our car parks. And obviously that's the nature of our business. We want to reduce our emissions, yet we also want to encourage people to come to our car parks. I think what's coming around the corner is the European Union, especially in Madrid and Portugal, are pushing plans through to try and build the infrastructure to push to EV. So that's in our favor.
When I think of transportation emissions, I don't think of parking lots. What is the traditional contribution of parking lots to the problem of transportation emissions? Because it seems like the parking lots are the innocent bystanders. The cars are parked once they're in your lot. So how severe could the emissions profile be, right?
All the churn that you have, all the vehicles coming in and out, you absorb their emissions as well. So we have to take that on our scope three. So that's why it's so big, because that's the nature of our business.
Can you give our listeners a sense of the scope of your business? What is your current asset mix across the region?
So there's two real parts to our business. So there's what we call on street, which is traffic enforcement contracted to local authorities. Then we have off street, which is the traditional car park. So whether it's a multi-story or a surface car park. So the people that would generally come to our car parks, it's mixed between retail, so people coming for shopping, or leisure, so down the coast of Spain, for example, or Portugal, and commuting, people just coming into work, and also hospitals. There are around about 70% of our business is in Spain and 30% in Portugal.
So what has it been like working with Macquarie on your zero emissions ambitions?
So what's been really good about this has been pushed by Macquarie and it's been supported by Macquarie. And it's something really interesting to progress, knowing that the shareholder is supporting it.
So how do you decarbonize a parking lot? There's so much that you don't control in the environment of a parking lot. How do you go about trying to control the emissions profile in a meaningful way?
Spain's trying to push through the measures to encourage electric vehicles or non-emission vehicles. We need to be part of that. So we need to facilitate it, make sure that we have spaces that provide charging. So we just need to be part of that journey and make it a destination, not just for parking, but also for charging.
So your emissions reduction planning sounds like it's very much aligned with government plans to roll out EV and to have available infrastructure there. That's something that is part of the vision of Telpark, is sort of reimagining what a parking lot is going to look like in the future?
This isn't just a commercial opportunity. This is keeping up with the change. We need to foresee that. The concept of parking will slowly change, I think. Rather than traditional turn up and park, they could turn into almost like the service stations of the future, not just for parking, but for charging, for drivers to rest, to eat, to drink. We're exploring at the moment a deal with a ride-hailing app-based taxi service that will potentially use our sites to rest. They can't just circulate waiting for a job, so they have to wait somewhere. So we're providing that solution. So not only can they charge, they can use it as a resting place waiting for other jobs to be allocated. We're exploring quite a few opportunities actually with last mile logistics. So these are the delivery trucks coming from a depot coming into the city. So it'll switch to smaller electric vehicles to the last delivery.
Can you talk about how the app contributes to lower emissions?
What the app does is it plans your journey. In Madrid, 20% of the pollution is attributed to idling or circling, looking for a space. So what the Telpark app does is, if you know where you're going to go, it'll tell you exactly which car park is near your destination, and you can even pre-book your parking. Also, for our on-street estate, it'll give you zones, so zones with free parking, free, to stop you idling, to stop you circling around. That drift of people driving around looking for spaces, it happens quite often in these cities.
So how would you sum up the success of your efforts to date in terms of your emissions reduction targets?
I think the real success has been the 78% reduction in our emissions. But we've got a long way to go because Scope 3 is by far the largest part of our emissions profile. So yeah, although it's an early success in terms of Scope 1 and 2, we've got an even bigger one around the corner.
And so what about internally at Telpark? Has your senior management been supportive?
So this has been part of our strategy. ESG has been part of our strategy. So the whole leadership team have been really supportive to this. Also, it's part of our business. The stuff I've been talking about now isn't necessarily a net zero sustainability issue in itself. This is part of how we adapt and how we do things in our business. So they've been really supportive of it.
So you mentioned that, you know, that Scope 3 emissions are really the monster, right?
Yeah, they are.
For you. So in what, can you just give our listeners a sense of the scale of that challenge?
I think because of the lack of control. Okay, so Scope 1 and 2 internally, we have control over. Scope 3 is sort of our control. We are reliant upon Spain and Portugal to push this agenda, because without the infrastructure, without all the changes to encourage this, without manufacturers having a real hard stop date. We need all these things to happen and happen really soon.
When you talk about transportation infrastructure and passing laws to, you know, either to fund or to regulate it, that's a very time-consuming process that doesn't necessarily conform to a 2030 or even a 2040 target. So what is the regulatory environment like for you? And on a net basis, is it helpful or is it a hindrance?
It's helpful in the way that one of the pieces of legislation now is that all car parks have to have one EV charger for every 40 spaces. So that's out. That's one that's been established. But what isn't helpful is the timescale and the ambition that they have. They really want to do this. So they've got some really ambitious targets over the next 3 years, really ambitious targets in terms of EV infrastructure. But I think it's unrealistic unless there's a massive catalyst that's pushed in to do this as a special project. So the downside is the speed.
What about the effects of the pandemic? In the early phase of the pandemic, people were staying away from public transportation and either staying home or traveling only in their personal cars. And now it seems like maybe the pendulum has swung the other way, that we're back to talking about emissions and back to public transportation, and that changes things. So can you talk about how the effects maybe either changed your business model at Telpark or changed transportation patterns in Iberia in a way that seems lasting?
Our volumes dropped as people weren't traveling and people weren't allowed to travel and people didn't want to travel. But it was temporary. As COVID finished, the volumes picked up again. How will this affect us? So home working, Will that affect our sort of corporate clients, retail? What will the effect be in the long term? As the lockdown stopped in Spain and Portugal, and as the restrictions started easing, our volumes have returned to 2019 levels and things change very quickly in both directions. We haven't really seen a massive impact in terms of the aftermath or the hangover of COVID.
So it sounds like there's been some resilience in your business model despite these dramatic externalities. Does that add to the economic case for moving away from this traditional car park model toward a mobility hub that offers other amenities, including energy infrastructure?
So this is changing to ensure that we're prepared for the way that our customers are changing, or the environment is changing, the world is changing. That's the first thing. So it's less about an economic opportunity. It's more about keeping current. I think it's brought with it opportunity. I think I'd call them add-ons. So as well as traditional parking, this whole change has pushed for add-ons. It's pushed for other things. Whereas normally the traditional parking is just you drive into the car park, go and come back and pay.
So Telpark is about to become the everything EV company across Southern Europe.
Yeah, we'll probably end up doing coffee, burgers. You never know.
Peter Hughes from Telpark, thank you for speaking with me today.
Hey, thanks very much.
From a leaner, meaner car park to a greener, cleaner shipping port. We'll shift now to Southern California, where the Long Beach Container Terminal, together with the adjoining port in Los Angeles, are the main gateways to the U.S. market for global trade. Combined, these ports are the pass-through for nearly half of all manufactured goods entering the United States. According to figures from the World Bank, global shipping accounts for about 3% of greenhouse gas emissions. But this figure masks the complexity of transportation forms that are involved in moving goods from point A to point B. As you'll hear from LBCT's Bonnie Nixon, a port terminal must account for emissions from vessels coming in and out of port, but also the cargo handling, rail locomotives, and tugs that move containers along on the intermodal transportation network. But we'll also hear about a surprising network effect arising from LBCT's efforts to measure and quantify terminal-wide emissions. LBCT's Scope 1 and 2 emissions are the Scope 3 emissions of most any company selling goods in the United States. And the reverse is also true. Scope 1 and 2 for retail firms represent Scope 3 for terminals like the one at Long Beach. We'll also hear how the twin innovations of port electrification and investment in cleaner shipping fuels like green hydrogen could revolutionize the footprint of the global shipping industry. Here's Long Beach's Bonnie Nixon. Bonnie Nixon, ESG and Sustainability Director at LBCT. Can you talk a little about Long Beach Container Terminals and why you're in a good position to make a meaningful impact on emissions?
Long Beach Container Terminal is set in the Port of Long Beach. And then just across the bay here, we have the Port of LA. There are 13 terminals. And LBCT is one of the largest terminals, and it is fully electrified. And so what that means is that the large ship-to-shore cranes, the rail-mounted cranes, and the stacking cranes are all electrified. In addition to that, we have electrified container transport vehicles. And so what we've been able to do by electrifying our operations is grow almost five times the size. So what it really has shown is that it's possible to protect the air and simultaneously achieve all of our productivity metrics. We've already had a meaningful impact on emissions, and we will continue to from now till the time that we hope to achieve net zero emissions in 2030.
So industry-wide, what is the emissions footprint of container terminals like compared with, say, airports or highways or other aspects of transportation infrastructure?
Today, shipping represents about 20% of the greenhouse gas or global emissions that we're all tracking and working so hard to